I'm really tired. I spent the whole day on my own taking down our carport because tomorrow I've got to rebuild our carport. So I am so tired. I'm tired down to my bones. I'm aching. I'm tired. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what's this got to do with Christmas? And the answer is nothing. So let's run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Rider Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. Who cares about a carport when we can talk about Christmas? I'm going to start off with the interactive bit. Before I do, I just want to say I got a letter from our lovely listener, Jennifer Kay, who is the owner of our Christmas podcast mascot, Elmer, the little dog. And this is what it said. It said, I wish I could have recorded Elmer's reaction to the opening of your show when you said, hello, hello, hello. Elmer thought someone else was in the house and barked like a mad dog. So I thought this week, the interactive bit is just going to be for Elmer. So the rest of you can sit back. I mean, you can get involved if you want to, but you don't have to. Are you ready? Here we go. Elmer, Elmer, who's a good boy? Come on, boy. Elmer, come on, boy. Come here, boy. Oh, you're a good boy. You're a good, good boy. Good boy, Elmer. Good boy, Elmer. How was that? Did you like that, Elmer? Yeah? No? Oh, well. So I've got a show for you. Here it is. I've got loads of emails, actually. Apparently, I did have. I thought I didn't have any listeners. Turns out I have got my three listeners. They're still there. It used to be four. At one point, it was five. Back down to three. But that's okay. It's January. What do you expect? So, yeah, I've got my three listeners. It's nice to have each of you here and Elmer. That makes four. So maybe, if I had the fourth one, that'd be five. So, big numbers, baby. Big numbers. Yeah, I got a lot of emails, but, I've got to do a show, so I don't think... no one's going to be offended if I don't mention their emails. I'm mentioning it now. This is me mentioning emails. So, let's get started with this. If you listened to the last episode, you would know that I talked about German smoker ornaments. And these are little ornaments that you put a cone of incense in and it looks like the little man is smoking. When I was reading about this, there was a single line at the bottom of the Wikipedia page that mentioned the Musmand of Vogtland. I hope I said that right. I sort of tried to put on a bit of the accent to it. It's Vogtland. Now, this is a region of Germany, and they've got their own tradition. And I thought, as a follow-up to the German smoker ornament, I'd talk about the Musmann. That's how it's spelled M-O-O-S-M-A-N-N. So it's Musmann. But do you want me to translate it for you? Are you ready? Yeah? Mossman. Okay? Now, just a little aside here. Do you remember Mossman from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe? Do you remember his figure? Because all the other figures were like plastic, but this one had like that flock coating you get. Sometimes on Christmas decorations you've got like that flock coating. Why did I mention that? A, that's got nothing to do with Christmas. B, it's got nothing to do with this Mossman. Why did I mention it? For your benefit. And maybe Jerry Davila, if he's listening, which he probably isn't, but if he is listening... I know that he's a fan of He-Man and all things 80s. So, yeah, that was for you, Jerry, if you're listening. Now, this tradition doesn't go back half as far as the German smokerman does. This is only back to about the 1840s. That's like the first evidence of the existence of these figures. And these ones, they're not hollowed out and you don't stick a cone of incense in them. But I did see one or two that were actually holding a little candle. So you'd stick a proper candle in his hand. You could do that, I guess. Not quite the same, but You know, it's nice. And they were made out of like wood, carved with wood, and decorated with moss. So it is like a little moss man. Makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. And he's got like a little white beard. And it's not just the moss man, it's also the moss weeble. Weeble. Apparently that's women. So that's moss weebles. Do you remember weebles? Remember weebles? It's like an egg-shaped toy. It had a little smiley face, well, it had a face on it. You could buy all different ones. I remember when I was a kid, I had a weeble aeroplane. We had a few weebles. Do you remember weebles? Weebles wobble, but they never fall down. That was sort of like the jingle on the adverts. Again, that has nothing to do with Christmas, but also again, they were around in the 80s, so Jerry DeVilla, if you're listening, yeah, weebles. So, should we move on? We're moving on. So, yeah, you've got the Moss Man and the Moss Weeble, but the Moss Man was much more popular. And apparently, like, kids would make these things and sell them as ornaments, you know, to earn a bit of cash. And the idea was that the Moss Man is a very nature-loving, he's like a Christmas figure. He lived out in the woods, but he's sort of like the spirit of the forest. And the legends, there's a couple of stories I'm going to tell you at the end, but the legends were like he was like a helpful sort of woodland sprite type thing, but or like a leprechaun almost, but he was more helpful. I think leprechauns have not got the best reputation as being helpful, whereas this little moss man, he apparently he's 3 foot tall, and yeah, he would help you. And one of the things he used to do was give leaves, a bag of leaves, I think he had to give 3 at a time for some reason, to the poor people, and the leaves would turn into gold, so they'd have plenty of money. And the Christmas aspect of it is that apparently he would come into your house for 12 days of Christmas. So yeah, so it is like a proper Christmas decoration, and I suppose people would put up their little Mossman decorations for the 12 days. Another thing I was reading is that bugs, or a lot of small creatures, they'll hibernate underneath the moss. So I think the idea is that moss has got this reputation, is a sign of security, and that's why these little moss men, I don't know, that's different sites had different sort of stories about the origin or the idea behind the moss man. So I have 2 stories to tell you, and this is the first one. The moss man and his wife were only 3 feet tall, and they lived in the forest under sticks and in caves, and they fed on roots and fruit and clothed themselves with moss and fir branches. Although it was a simple, almost miserable life made difficult by their enemy, the wild hunter, the moss people were happy, and they liked to help the poor people and reward good deeds. During the Christmas season, the moss people fled to the homes of the people and stayed there for 12 nights for the so-called lodgings at the turn of the year. One day, a poor boy fell madly in love with the neighbour's daughter, and he sought solace by taking a walk in the forest. Suddenly, a small figure jumped onto the path in front of him and asked him to make 3 crosses in a tree. The boy fulfilled this wish, and when the wild hunter appeared a little while later with his pack, the 3 crosses protected the boy and the little creature, which the young man now recognised was a moss female. As a thank you, the moss woman gave the boy a branch, which he put on his hat. At home, when the boy took off his hat, he found that the branch had turned to gold, and now he had enough money to marry the girl next door and offer her a good life. That's a nice one, isn't it? Pleasant, I thought. Yeah, nice story. It's just, you know, you help someone, you get rewarded with a gold stick. I think that's happened to all of us at some point in our lives, hasn't it? Now, elsewhere I did read this idea about putting the 3 crosses on a tree, and the 3 crosses apparently represent the Father, the Son and the Holy Spirit. And this would provide protection against the wild hunter and his pack. Yeah. So this is another story. This is the Mossman legend of the Black Stone. The wife of the Mossman had become ill and was likely to die. She lay on a bed of luminescent moss, moaning and whimpering, while the Mossman lamented his heartache to the animals of the forest. A wandering monk came through the forest, and the Mossman stopped him and told him of the sorrow of his wife who was dying. The moss man begged the monk to give his wife the last blessing, and as payment he offered to fill the monk's coat bag full of leaves, which would turn to gold. Now, although the monk had heard tales of the moss man turning leaves into gold, he didn't believe it. And in his pride, he harshly drove the little man away and refused to give his wife the last blessing. Enraged by so much ruthlessness and inhumanity, the little moss man said, "Your heart is as hard as a stone, and you will become as hard as your heart, and stand here for all eternity. A reminder to all hard-hearted people." The wasp woman died, but between Falkenstein and Grünbach is still the fossilized monk, now known as the Black Stone, and his face can still be seen, and with a little luck, you will find luminant moss there. So there you go. You've got two stories there, haven't you? One, do a good deed, get a gold stick. Two, do a bad deed, get turned to stone. It's pretty easy, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You just think, how should I live my life? Be a good person, get rewarded. Be a git, turn to stone. So, yeah, there we go. And that's pretty much it about the Moss Man. I spent a lot of time trying to find loads of different websites, but most of them just had the same details on them, the same couple of stories. I like that last one because the website I found that, they actually did give a location of where the monk was. It was turned to stone. And they had a couple of pictures on there, but of the Black Stone. But it didn't really look like a monk, but still. Yeah, there you go. And what's interesting about this legend, about the Mussmann, is it's not widely known throughout Germany. It really is specific to that region. And, you know, they do have statues and stuff of little Mussmann, and you can buy them in the shops. But a lot of people in Germany would never have heard of them. So, do you see what's happened there, kids? You're listening to this podcast, and you know more about Christmas in Germany than people in Germany. Or at least you know more about Moss Men than some people in Germany. There you go. How's that? Should we move on? I hope you enjoyed that. I really enjoyed learning about it. So yeah, let's get on with this. Back at the start of December, I got an email from Elsie Newman. And I've mentioned Elsie Newman a few times on the podcast. He sent me emails throughout the year. But listen how he starts it, right? Listen to this, right? "I have not listened to the cast for a long time." This is back in December, so he started back in December, right? "I think I checked out halfway through a cast when you talked about Lisa. I just had to go download some songs on Spotify and never came back." Right? That was at the end of February. So he's listening to January and February. I mentioned Band Aid 2 and talk about Lisa Stansfield. And he's like, "Lisa Stansfield? Forget the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm out of it." And so for the rest of the year, he's listening to... Well, I guess it's not the whole year he's listening to Lisa Stansfield. Don't get me wrong. Lisa Stansfield has got an amazing voice. But so have... Oh, I haven't, have I? Okay. Anyway, then he said some other stuff. And at the end he said, "I have a story of shame." And he said he's going to send it through. Do you know, I don't have to tell you the bit about the whole Band-Aid thing, but I thought I'd mention that because I couldn't believe that it was my fault. I actually drove away a listener just by mentioning Lisa Stansfield. I hope me mentioning Lisa Stansfield now is not going to cut my listening figures from 3 down to like 0. All of you are there going, "Lisa Stansfield? Why am I listening to the Total Christmas Podcast when I could listen to Lisa Stansfield? Can we stop saying Lisa Stansfield?" Okay, so this is Elsie Newman's story of shame. He's actually put, "Here is my stupid / shameful story." So here we go. He starts it by saying, yeah, "Shameful story or just being stupid?" He says, "Christmas in Alaska, 1976. So that would have been, what, nearly 20 years before I was born, I wish. And he's put, here's a note, "It's always dark in winter in Alaska." I think we all knew that, didn't we? But anyway, thanks for telling us. So it says, his son is 6, his daughter is 1. It's Christmas. Goodness me, he's barely written anything, actually. I've just got to piece this together. I'm pretty much telling the blooming story. He's pretty much giving me bullet points. Can we start again? Do you know what? I'm going to have to read through it, right? Turn it into a story, and then I'll come back to you. Is that okay? Right, I'll be back in about an hour. I'll speak to you soon. Okay, I'm back. Did you miss me? Of course you did. This is my shameful... I'm doing it as Elsie Newman, okay? But it's my voice. You kind of figured that, I guess. But I'm doing it anyway. Are you ready? Here we go. "This is my shameful story, or was I just being stupid? It was Christmas in Alaska, 1976. And please note, it is always dark in Alaska in the winter. My son was 6, my daughter was 1. It was Christmas Eve, and we'd invited a couple of friends over to come and spend Christmas Eve with myself and my wife and the kids. We had a great time. Good food, lots of drinking. My kids got to open one gift each that night, because that's the custom in my family. But just one gift on Christmas Eve, and then the rest on Christmas Day. So, the kids went to bed. So my wife and I started putting all the gifts from Santa Claus around the Christmas tree. And one of the gifts was a slot car track with four cars. I don't know what they're called everywhere. We call it Scalectrics, it's called in this country. That's the brand name. I guess you can buy other types, but yeah. Anyway, that was a little aside. That was me talking there, not Elsie. Okay, you ready? Right, let's get back into it. One gift was a slot car track with four cars. It was cool. It looked great. It was the business. So our friends and us, we started playing with it, and it was super. I never had one when I was a kid, and neither did my friends, but they didn't make those when we were kids. So, more drinking, and 5 o'clock in the morning comes around, and my son starts coming down the stairs. Just by chance, my wife saw him, I think just in time, and she told him that Santa may be on the roof and took him back upstairs. Our friends and I cleaned up the place, and they left. The sun came down, and had a great Christmas. But for us, it was hangovers all around. I've not asked him, but this may be the time he knew there was not a Santa Claus. I hope that wasn't the time, because he's only six. I reckon he's still got at least a year when they're six. I reckon I'm aiming for at least two more with Robin. I've got a mate whose daughter was 11, and she still said she believed. I don't think she did. I think she was just telling her dad that to make him feel happy. By that point, everyone in school is going to be... Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Elsie's story. I love that one. I really do. It's just alcohol. You know, it's the cause of and solution to all of life's problems, to quote Homer Simpson. Thank you for sending that story in, Elsie. The thing about the stories of Christmas shame, they're my favourite part of the show. And to be honest, I don't have that many of them. Well, I've got loads of my own ones, but some of them, do you know what, they're pretty bad, actually. I was going to tell one, and then I sat down and thought about it. I thought, no, I'll lose my three listeners if I say that. It was a long time ago. I've changed since then. It wasn't that bad, you know, but it was bad enough. You think, oh, what a twat. But I have got a couple coming up that I've been trying to ask my mates to tell the stories for me, but they're refusing, so I'm going to have to tell the stories on their behalf. Anyway, if you've got a story of shame, please do send it in, because I love hearing them, and I think everyone likes hearing them, because it makes you feel that little bit better about yourself, knowing that other people are doing stuff like that as well. Anyway, thanks one last time to Elsie. I hope you're listening right now. You know, I know this time of year, not everyone is, but if you are, thanks again, Elsie. If you're not, well, my loss is Lisa Stansfield's gain. Now let's do this. So in the build-up to Christmas, I was playing a Christmas song each week by Adam Kennedy and his Creative Commoners from his Christmas album, literally Shrunk Down and Living in My Christmas Village. And I really enjoyed the songs on there. It's one of those things that, you know, I like doing in the lead up to Christmas, doing one a week. And I wasn't going to do any more in the new year. But back in the middle of January, Scott and Jay from Jingle Jank podcast had an interview with Adam Kennedy where they played a load of his songs and they chatted about the album. And I found it really, really interesting. Although I'd had emails between myself and Adam, I'd never actually had a conversation, and I didn't know very much about his background and how he went about recording the album. And I think if you ever listen to it, you'll really enjoy it as well, and you'll get a lot from it. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play another of his songs. This, I think, is my favourite, actually. I should have played this in the lead up to Christmas. I'm going to play the whole thing, so there's a bit of chatting at the start, and then the song comes in. But I really, you know, it made me laugh out loud. The other ones I found good, you know, enjoyed them. But this one actually had me laughing out loud. And that's something that he should be very proud of. So, yeah, this song is called Those High Notes. Here we go.
Hello, Mr. Kennedy.
What's going on, Doctor?
I bet you're wondering why I called you in today.
Nope. Don't really wonder about anything. Literally, the only thing I do wonder about is whether the Werther's original recipe is the original recipe, because no.
Your mother was in here earlier, and she told me you were recording a Christmas album.
Yep.
Well, she played me some songs, and I have some big concerns here. You gotta stop going for those high notes. You don't know how to sing properly.
Yep.
You are putting far too much strain on your lungs.
Yep.
I know this may sound crazy, But if you go for just one more high note, yep, your lungs could explode. Kaboosh! Gone.
But, I mean, we've only got one last song on the album.
Are there any high notes in it?
I mean...
This Christmas is gonna be different than before. Doctor told me my lungs can't hold out much more. I gotta stop going for those high notes. But who really cares, 'cause it's Christmas!
Oh, my lungs. Oh, my lungs exploded. Both of them. I just went to both of them. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that a whole bunch of times, and it made me laugh again, out loud. So that song is called Those High Notes. It's the last song on the album. Adam Kennedy and his Creative Commons literally shrunken down and shrunk down and living in my Christmas village. And if you want to listen to the whole album, it's easy enough to find. It's adamkennedy.bandcamp.com. Simple as that. And also, check out Scott and Jay's most recent episode of Jingle Jank. I say most recent, it was when I'm recording this. It came out on the 13th of January. It was episode 39, where they have a good old chat with Adam and play a load of his songs. I highly recommend it. It was very funny to listen to and interesting as well. So, yeah, check it all out. Now it's time for... Do you know what? I say this every time, don't I? Now it's time for this. Now it's time for this. Now it's time for this. It's sort of like now it's just one of those things. It's just ingrained in the podcast. Like, you know how I introduce it by saying, hello, you beautiful people. And then I say the bit at the end, you know, the bit, Merry Christmas, you know, I love you. And it's sometimes I think, could I mix it up? But then I also think, well, it works. And when I say works, you know, I've got my three listeners. So do I keep saying, and now it's time for this, or do I just play the next jingle? What do you reckon? I've got a treat for you now, kids. It's another one from my Grumpy Jokes for Christmas Blokes. That's not what it's called, is it? Christmas Jokes for Grumpy Blokes by Nick Harris. That was the book my wife gave me for Christmas. And do you know what's interesting? Actually, I got an email from another podcaster, a chap called Wayne. Actually, I'll talk about his podcast later. Another guy called Wayne emailed me and said that he got the same book. He's got the same book. There you go. For Christmas. So there you go. Yeah. Clearly, it's a popular joke book with jokes that are Christmas adjacent. Anyway, there's another one. It's not a two-liner, so I'm going to have to read the whole bit out to you. And I'm slightly changing it, but not much. Right, so here comes the joke. Are you ready? Are you ready? Probably ready, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? You're listening to the podcast. This is... Should we just... I'm doing the joke. Here comes the joke. Are you ready? Two men are talking in the pub, and one says, oh, what did you get your wife for Christmas? And the other one says, yeah, I bought her a lovely diamond ring. And his mate goes, I thought she said she wanted a brand new Tesla. And the bloke says, yeah, well, where am I going to get a fake Tesla from? Get it? I like that again. That's another good one. Don't tell me it's not a good one. I found that really funny. You didn't see that coming. Because the point is, right, he bought his wife a fake diamond ring. You see, it wasn't a real diamond. That's what the joke is. Did you need me to explain? Because you're there thinking, oh, he's bought his wife a diamond ring. But he hasn't bought his wife a diamond ring. See, what he's actually done is he's gone out and he's bought a fake one instead of buying a car. But he couldn't buy a fake car, could he? Because you don't get fake Teslas, but you can buy a fake diamond ring. That's the point of the whole joke. So what I'm saying is...
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Do you know what? I'm not 100% sure if I should have played that jingle for this bit, because it's a bit different this week. I should have played something like, "What the Dickens?" I should have. Maybe that can be the jingle. You ready? Here it comes. "What the Dickens?" Yeah, not sure if I'll keep using that. Anyway, boys and girls, I've got something a little bit different for you this time. I'm not actually reviewing a version of A Christmas Carol. Now, I came up with this idea back long before Christmas, and I thought, it was when I was reading A Christmas Carol, and there were so many little things in it, mainly food. It was like different words that they'd mention, and I'd think, I don't know, I reckon people don't know what that means, because I'd quite often I'd look up a word and think, I wonder what that is, what are they referring to? And so I went online and I typed in A Christmas Carol glossary, just to get myself some ideas so I could have, you know, I thought it'd be a nice thing to do an ongoing segment where I talk about a bits in A Christmas Carol, if you read the book, that you might not quite understand. And so that's what's happening in this episode. Now, I went online and I've found a fantastic resource. And what it's called is A Christmas Carol Glossary, Commentary and Notes by Rich Bowen of Christmas 2004. And it's fantastic because I've read through it. And as you're going through, you think, do you know what? I didn't even notice that. Because as you read in the book, like there might be the odd phrase that you'll think, you'll just bypass it. You think, I don't know what that means. But you're not even registering that you don't know what it means. You just, you know, it's just some words that you think, oh, well, I'll ignore that, you know. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to pick two specific bits. Now, this isn't going to be a segment I do every episode. Each time I do this segment, we'll pick a theme and we'll talk about bits in the book that you may not know what they mean. So this week we're going to talk about a couple of things that happen in the Cratchit's house. And I've got to say, when I read this, I was like, I did not know that. I was completely befuddled. So yeah, I'm going to play an audio clip from the book, and then I'm going to talk about it afterwards. So here comes the first bit.
And now two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose and known it for their own. And basking in luxurious thoughts of sage and onion, these young Cratchits danced about the table.
Now I'm also going to play you this bit as well, because this follows on. Have a listen to this.
Master Peter and the two ubiquitous young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession.
Okay, so whenever I read the book, I just assumed they were talking about, they were walking down the street and they could smell their goose, like, you know, from down the street as they were getting closer to their house. I thought that's what they meant in the first bit. And then the second bit, when they rushed off to fetch the goose, I thought they'd just gone into the kitchen. But that's not the case. Now, the deal is the Cratchits live in a small house, and most houses in those days didn't have their own oven. And we do learn that they've got a fireplace because they've got a saucepan which is filled with potatoes that Peter is cooking and stirring up. So that's what the fireplace is being used for. There's no oven, so where is the goose? Well, this is the line that we heard earlier. The two Cratchits come in screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose and known it for their own. Now, what that means is they've gone past the baker shop and they can smell a goose in the baker shop and they know it's their goose. Because what people used to do, because people didn't have an oven, on a Sunday when the baker's was supposed to be closed, what they would do is they'd open up so that people could use their ovens to cook their Sunday dinners. That was a thing. And apparently that still happens today in some countries. I was reading the comments on another article, and a person in Turkey had said, yeah, in my family never had an oven in Turkey because it's too hot and you wouldn't want to cook inside your house. So we'd take our food to the nearby pizza house and they'd cook it for us. And so it still goes on. So later on, when it says the two ubiquitous young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, they literally had to leave the house and run off to the baker's to go and get their cooked goose and bring it home for dinner. The fact that the poor, who didn't have ovens, had to rely on bakers to cook their dinners is actually mentioned slightly earlier in A Christmas Carol. And now I'm going to play that part of the story for you as well. Now, this is quite a long clip, but it is all relevant to what we're talking about, okay? So it's a couple of minutes long. Right, here we go.
There emerged from scores of by streets, lanes, and nameless turnings innumerable people carrying their dinners to the baker's shops. The sight of these poor revelers appeared to interest the spirit very much, for he stood with Scrooge beside him in a baker's doorway, and taking off the covers as their bearers passed, sprinkled incense on their dinners from his torch. And it was a very uncommon kind of torch, for once or twice, when there were angry words between some dinner carriers who had jostled each other, he shed a few drops of water on them from it, and their good humour was restored directly. For they said it was a shame to quarrel upon Christmas Day. And so it was. God love it, so it was. In time the bells ceased, and the bakers were shut up. And yet there was a genial shadowing forth of all these dinners, and the progress of their cooking, in the thawed blotch of wet above each baker's oven, where the pavement smoked as if its stones were cooking too. "Is there a peculiar flavour in what you sprinkle from your torch?" asked Scrooge. "There is. My own." "Would it apply to any kind of dinner on this day?" asked Scrooge. "To any kindly given. To a poor one most." "Why to a poor one most?" asked Scrooge. "Because it needs it most." "Spirit," said Scrooge after a moment's thought, "I wonder you, of all the beings in the many worlds about us, should desire to cramp these people's opportunities of innocent enjoyment."
"I?" cried the spirit.
"You would deprive them of their means of dining every seventh day, often the only day on which they can be said to dine at all," said Scrooge, "wouldn't you?"
"I?" cried the spirit.
"You seek to close these places on the seventh day," said Scrooge, "and it comes to the same thing."
"I seek?" exclaimed the spirit.
"Forgive me if I am wrong. It has been done in your name, or at least in that of your family," said Scrooge.
"There are some upon this earth of yours," returned the spirit, "who lay claim to know us, and who do their deeds of passion, pride, ill-will, hatred, envy, bigotry, and selfishness in our name, who are as strange to us and all our kith and kin as if they had never lived. Remember that, and charge their doings on themselves, not us."
So what's happening there is that Scrooge is alluding to a Act of Parliament that was trying to be passed at the time, where Sabbatarians, and that refers to people who wanted everyone to observe the Sabbath, so all shops have to be closed, people weren't allowed to drink on a Sunday, they were trying to create legislation so that the bakers couldn't open on a Sunday, because the poor people, if you couldn't afford an oven, you couldn't afford to go every day to have your meat cooked at the baker's. So, you know, during the week you might just have stew, stuff that you could cook on the fire, whereas if you wanted something cooked in an oven, something roasted, maybe once a week on a Sunday when no one was at work, that was the day you choose to do it. And also the bakers wouldn't be selling bread, so they'd have their ovens free to be used. So the whole conversation there. Now, as I read the book, I always assumed it was about trying to close the shops, but I didn't realise it was referring specifically to the fact that people went to the baker's on a Sunday to cook their food. Now, Charles Dickens actually wrote a pamphlet in 1836 under his nom de plume Timothy Sparks, and it was titled Sunday Under Three Heads, where he argued against restrictive Sunday legislation because he felt that it unfairly penalised the poor more than the rich, and he lambasted the Act of Parliament, and apparently they believed that this was actually instrumental in it getting defeated, and so the legislation never actually came into being. So there we go, that explains that bit, which in the past I never understood, and I know that when I'm reading it next December, I'm going to see it in a whole new light about the fact that the Cratchit's goose wasn't being cooked in the house. Now, the only downside I can see about that is that in The Muppets Christmas Carol, they're cooking it in the house. And I feel like, oh no, The Muppets Christmas Carol is clearly the greatest version of A Christmas Carol, and they got something wrong. But that's the only thing they got wrong, definitely. I'm sure. Talking fruit, that was a thing in Victorian times. Okay. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is also about the Cratchit's Christmas dinner. Now, This is a line that I'm sure you've all heard before. Listen to this.
Is the pudding still singing in the copper, Peter?
Yes, come and hear it.
You come too, Mary and Belinda.
Okay, that's not the bit that's in the book, but we all recognise that bit, don't we? Okay, let me play the line from the book. Here it comes.
While the two young Cratchits hustle Tiny Tim and bore him off into the wash house that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper.
Now this goes back again to the fact that the Cratchits didn't have an oven and the fire was being used to cook the potatoes. So where do you cook your Christmas pudding? Now I always assumed that the copper was just referring to some sort of pressure cooker type pan, or some kind of copper pan with a lid where they'd be steaming the Christmas pudding wrapped in its cloth. But no, that's not the case. That's not the case at all. See, what it says is they bore him out to the wash house to see the pudding. And again, I just, you know, just assumed, I don't even know what I assumed. I guess I just scanned over that bit. But the deal is this. The wash house was literally what you might expect. It was a house for doing your washing, like a shed, or, well, not a shed, but probably a brick building where you'd do your washing. And often these were shared by a number of families. So, you know, it was accessible to other people, which is the reason that Cratchit's wife says this little line.
Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone, too nervous to bear witness, to take the pudding up and bring it in. Suppose it should not be done enough. Suppose it should break in turning out. Suppose somebody should have got over the wall of the backyard and stolen it while they were merry with the goose. A supposition at which the two young Cratchits became livid. All sorts of horrors were supposed.
So in the wash house would be the copper, and the copper was like a really deep, huge pot. Trying to think what sort of size you'd be looking at there. Imagine you put your arms in a circle around in front of you, as wide as, maybe think like a small hula hoop, maybe that sort of size, and deep as well, a deep, big, huge pot made of copper, often but not always. And underneath this there would be a fire, and what would happen is it would be filled with water, and you'd put your clothes in there, and that's where you'd wash them, in the hot water in the copper. Now what she's done is put her pudding, which would already be wrapped in cloth because that's how you make your Christmas pudding, she's put that in the copper to cook. That's what's happening. So that's why she's worried that someone could come and steal it, because they'd be able to smell it and they might hop over the fence into this shared building and be on their toes with a Christmas pudding. And it never even crossed my mind that that could be how they would cook a Christmas pudding. But I guess in those days you had to make do. You didn't have an oven, like I said, you got a fire. You know, if you want other things cooked up at the baker's, you're gonna have to pay for those as well. So you'd use what you had, and there was this big copper, and apparently the copper also would sometimes be used for bathing as well. Not necessarily adults, because it was a bit small for an adult, but certainly children you could put in the copper and bathe them and wash them in the wash house, I guess. There you go. So this got me thinking, because like the modern equivalent of that is you getting your Christmas pudding and putting it in the washing machine and then leaving it in there and then taking it out when it's done. Is it done yet? Yeah, it's done. It's nice. What does it smell like? Persil. Do you know what Persil is? It's a type of washing powder. Or would you use it in would you use the tumble dryer instead? Would you put it in the tumble dryer? Or maybe you'd put it in the washing machine. That's done. You've had it on spin cycle. Take it out, put it in the tumble dryer just to heat it up. And then you open it up and it's been mashed up, probably. So that's not a good idea. Oh, actually, thinking about it, that's not shared, is it? I've got my own washing machine. It's more like you've got to go to the laundrette, or you might call it a laundromat, to go and have your pudding. And you put it in there, in the laundromat, in the laundrettes, you put it in the washing machine there. And then, you know, I suppose you would be worried that someone's going to go, you know, because the spin cycle's finished, and they're going to open it up and go, oh, there's a Christmas pudding in here, I'll have that. Just like Mrs. Cratchit was worried, eh? Yeah. So, let that be a lesson to you. Don't cook your Christmas pudding in the laundrette or laundromat. Neither, either. Don't do that. Okay? Right. Has that cleared this all up? I hope you gained something from this, because I found this so incredibly interesting. There's a lot of other things where there's just one word here, one word there, that I will, in future episodes, I'll just explain exactly what that thing is. It might just be an oldie-worldy word for that thing. But this week, I hope you've gained a bit of an insight, and when you're reading A Christmas Carol or listening to the audiobook next year, you'll be thinking, oh, that's what they mean by that bit. Like I said, this won't be every episode I do this, but I did it today and I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to drop me an email to tell me what you thought of that, you can, but you don't have to. Shall we move on? Okay then. This episode's recommendation is called The Christmas Alphabet. Now, this is a podcast by a gentleman by the name of Wayne Clark, and he's an ordained Baptist minister, and he records it, writes it, and edits it. And what it is, here's the blurb: Christmas in Alphabetical Order, a podcast about Christmas from a British perspective, where each episode looks at topics starting with one letter of the alphabet from A to Z. Every 2 weeks, there's a new episode about Christmas feelings and facts, all starting with the letter of the week. So it's at the moment, it's up to letter F. I binge listened to it all last week and I really enjoyed it. It's really interesting. It covers a lot of interesting facts. Each episode's about 20 to 25 minutes long. And if you like Christmas, I think you'll learn a lot and I think you'll enjoy it. So that's Christmas Alphabet Podcast, hosted by Wayne Clark. And he's the gentleman I mentioned earlier who also got the same book I did for Christmas, The Christmas Jokes for Grumpy Blokes. So not only is he a podcast presenter, he's also the owner of a book that I own. So, you know, there's that, isn't there? Yeah. Christmas Alphabet. Check it out. And that is it for this episode. It's a little bit of a short one, I think. But then, I guess, especially back in December, the episodes always tend to get longer. I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do, don't you? I tell you every episode. And also, I tell you every episode that I tell you every episode. So this week, I'm telling you that I tell you every episode that I tell you every episode. Should we stop? Yeah, let's do that. Right. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. And you know, don't you? You do know, don't you? That I love you. So Merry Christmas!
For not shouting at me.